Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth, every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. Today, we're exploring creative energy in several forms and in one person. She is Vashon's new poet laureate, a published author, a nature illustrator, creator of interpretive signs, and almost anything natural and visual. She is Sandra Noel. Welcome, Sandra. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
You know, I see all the things that you've done, and I wonder, how the heck do you do all that?
Well, time, and I've been doing my business as far as art and graphic design for 34 years, so collectively, it adds up.
Yeah, and some of the things you've done in those 34 years are now commemorative Strawberry Festival posters.
Yeah.
Was there a favorite?
Yes, for me, the herons. There were a pair of herons that I thought were, design-wise, I really liked. But they were kind of something I got to do for myself. They weren't part of the business, so that was kind of nice.
So I think about you and what I've seen you do over the years, and so much of it is about the natural world and the environment, and it's rendered so beautifully. So what came first for you, art or nature?
Ooh, what came first for me was I was a fisheries biologist for National Marine Fisheries Center. I'd graduated from college in marine biology at Western, and I wanted to work in that field, which I did, and it was great because with a young son and a government job, it was extremely helpful.
Yeah.
But I realized early on that that type of work and working for a big bureaucracy was not something I was comfortable doing, even though I loved everybody there. It was a great place. I decided about 8 years in to start a business doing graphic design and illustration, a complete 180 of what I was involved in, but it was still the natural world. And someone had asked me to illustrate some artwork for a restaurant called Leshai, and because they, for some reason, decided they'd call fisheries department to see if anybody could draw. I don't know why, but I went, yes. And it started with that while I was still working there. And then it just kind of compounded into more of a business over time. And then I left the service and worked full-time as an illustrator, graphic designer.
So as a single mother, you were basically working two jobs for a while until you had enough going on your freelance business.
Exactly. And I think most parents and single parents, especially today, more so than even back then, are doing that.
Mm-hmm. Multiple jobs.
Exactly.
I want to do a quick diversion because we've all been going through the pandemic, and I'm sure you've been watching the news about what's happening with employers and employees apparently as a result of the pandemic. What do you think about the fact that employers are having to do more to court employees mm-hmm. because folks learned over the pandemic that they didn't want to work like slaves?
I think that's happened throughout history, too. But we are looking at pay for some folks out there that no one can live on minimum wage. No one. Companies the size of Walmart and McDonald's and places like that who have now raised their wages to get workers. People were on food stamps. They were unable to meet basic needs. And now, because of this change, potentially the minimum wage will go up to something people can live on. And we won't be subsidizing, I'm on a soapbox, subsidizing giant corporations who are get away with paying those kinds of wages and have people have to go get their food through federal programs, which is what's been happening up to now, I think.
Yeah, the idea that people are supposedly having jobs and still having to get food stamps. I think I heard today that 32% of the wealth in this country is held by 1% of the people. The lower 50% hold 2% of the wealth in the country.
that's just not sustainable.
No.
And clearly, you are a passionate political person. How does that influence your poetry?
Well, I wrote mostly nature poetry, but I did do one book that was more related to climate change. It's called Unraveling the Endless Knot.
Mm.
In Buddhism, the endless knot is how things work cohesively together, and you break one part of the web, the whole thing falls apart. It works as one. And so this book is about climate and how it's affected mostly the natural world.
Can you pull an excerpt? Is there a favorite from that book that you'd like us to hear?
Sure. Let's see. This is called, it's a short one, it's called The Missing Vocabulary of the Divine. In Inuit, there are over 50 words for snow. Will they melt syllable by syllable with the ice caps, float among the icebergs with stranded starving polar bears, sift letter by letter between empty rib cages and eye sockets? Will there be 50 words for loss when we are finally done?
Whew. That's powerful.
Thank you.
Very often when I think about art in all its forms, I think about it as the essence of truth. When it's really good, to me, it speaks to the essence of truth. What would you say about that?
Art or art, poetry, music, all of those fields, theater. Yeah, I mean, I think that's why Bread and Roses, that idea, you know, give us bread, but give us roses too, meaning without art, what is life? That's how I feel about it anyway.
How do you get to your truth when you're creating, whether it be poetry or illustrations?
Well, illustration is my job. So how do I get to that? Deadline and money. I work on a project, but that's mostly what I do, is I bid a job, get the job, and then do the job and meet the deadline. That's far more of a different kind of energy. There's very little art. The posters were one, a few other small things. But in the art field, illustration, that's my job. And it's creative, but it's different, the energy to get there.
Uh-huh.
A lot of coffee, a lot of terror. Poetry's different. Really? I don't have to do that. There's no money in poetry. Bless it.
Many have proven
somebody
that.
Somebody out there is, but not me. But that's okay. But that is, to me, purely creative. It's a great deal of fun. I don't have to stress about it. There's no deadline for me. And I go down to a beach or walk in the forest or run someplace and see something like amazing, like, you know, little American goldfinch along the fence line, and, you know, and it just comes. It's a different thing.
Nature is so poetic in and of itself.
Mm.
You say you're a runner. I know you have been a marathon runner and now a half marathon runner. How does that fit into your creative energy? How does the running feed you?
Oh, in so many ways. I think anybody who I meditate too, but anybody who meditates or runs or walks and does anything long enough in a solitary way, I think it really helps you think, at least for me, helps me think, opens up. If there's a problem on a job or I'm working on anything, it really does help my mind as much as the body.
Yeah, it's hard to separate the two, I think. Yeah. We're talking with Sandra Noel, who is Vashon Island's new poet laureate. How do you feel about that?
Amazed. There's some really good poets on this island, and I'm really grateful that they chose me this time, and I'm hoping to work with everybody to do something fun the next couple of years now that COVID's kind of heading south, hopefully.
What sort of fun things would you do as poet laureate?
Well, we're going to, when we get together next weekend on Friday evening, what we're going to do, I think, is talk about some things that people might be interested in, setting up workshops, maybe, definitely some readings, which we haven't been able to do for over a year. So we'll all kind of put our heads together and come up with some things. Like, I'm hoping we can work with the community, like at the high school, maybe. The nursing home, maybe, and that kind of additional things to the poetry on the island, kind of open it up to the community.
And you are doing that officially on Saturday, the 23rd of July?
I think it's Friday night, and at 7 o'clock at Snapdragon.
And the public is welcome.
Yep.
So you're going to be pulling ideas from the people who attend and from among the other poets.
Yeah.
How do you see poetry workshops serving the individual?
Well, I've taken a few. Ann Spires is one of my favorite teachers, although she was probably sitting, if she's listening to this, she's going, stop it, because she says she doesn't like to teach, but she's excellent, and she's taught haiku programs and poetry, and everyone I've taken from her has just been, as an individual poet, has just raised the bar. So having teachers like that, or someone who writes like she writes, really makes a difference.
What about for somebody who's not a poet? Why would I, if I'm not a poet or a writer, go to a poetry workshop?
I wasn't a poet when I started 10 years ago doing this, and you don't know if you're a poet until you sit down and start doing it. It's like art. A lot of people say they can't draw, and some people are right, but there are a lot of people who aren't.
You know? Who really can draw.
Yeah, but they just have never tried it for whatever reason. And I think poetry is the same way. We've all got a poet in there somewhere.
Well, and to my mind, it seems that our culture tends to criticize any artistic endeavor if it is not sellable or not fit for public consumption, if you will.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the impact of that attitude on the average person who might be gaining from poetry or art?
Well, it's hard to say. There's a lot in the arts in this country that aren't supported for people to just go out and do it. It's a complicated question. I work in the field of art, so I am getting income from that. I don't know that I would do it otherwise. It's at that level. I just wouldn't work that hard, probably. Poetry is different in that sense of it being an individual, kind of very private thing. And it's hard for people, I think, if they look at, you can't look at that as a financial, you know, in that context. It's rare that happens in that area. Most writers know that.
You know, right.
Great writers out there that are publishing their own work. I know several, and they do beautiful work. But the publishing business now is vicious, and you have to have a number one hot seller name. Otherwise, they won't even look at a new book. And that wasn't the way it used to be. I'm not talking poetry. I'm talking novels and that
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
Which I don't write.
But that brings up a good question. You've published 4 books.
Yeah.
What were the challenges that you ran into in that process?
Well, I do this like I do art. I'll get a manuscript together, and then I just send it out, and I have no shame. I have hundreds of rejections, and that's the thing a lot of unpublished poets shy away from, and some far better than anything I've ever written. I know 2 right now, and I won't name them, but you know who you are, who are so afraid of getting those rejection slips. Just don't worry about it.
So give me the nuts and bolts of that. Where did you find a list of 100 people or 100 organizations to send your work
online
to?
And you go through, try and find some really good publications. And it's helpful to go through Poets and Writers. That's a magazine that I get, and, you know, kind of look into it from there. But basically just find some either through universities or publications that you see have a good track record. They've been around a long time. They won't ask you to pay for your own book. I had two of my books published through a company that basically you have to sell your book up front to a certain number, and then you get so many copies. They'll produce it if they accept your book. But if you want enough copies to make it worth doing, then you have to go through that process. I did that a couple of times. I'll never do it again.
Oh, because not a process you're recommending.
Well, it is if you want to get a book out there, and that's a big company, and they have a lot of poets.
What company?
It's called Finishing Line Press. Anybody that wants to try their first poetry book, I would say go for it. The only issue is you've got to look at hustling that book out to friends for, you know, enough to get those first 250 books so that you'll have those to sell, and they'll have those to sell, the publisher.
So when you send out your query letters, mm-hmm. Do you create a standard query letter that you just send out en masse to?
Well, for these other publications, there's a little difference in how you do each one. They have, with poetry, they have guidelines. And if you are very fastidious about those guidelines, it's critical, because if you're not, you're not going to get your book published for that alone, because they have hundreds and hundreds of manuscripts, right? A good editor told me this. Mm-hmm. If you make a mistake in that process, you can take a perfectly good manuscript and not get it published.
Are those guidelines something that's standard for publishers?
Pretty much. But each one it's got its own. Like, some are blind, where they say, you know, we don't want your name on the manuscript, and some aren't. And there's a list of the way they want the book laid. I know people who ignore things like point size on the text and things like that. Don't do that. They say that for a reason. How they want their books. So I just am really careful with everyone. And then I do a cover letter, but the cover letter is standard almost for everything. I change the name of the book.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And then the name of the publisher that I'm sending to.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll set it up that way. And then as one manuscript gets rejected, then I send it to the next one. And it's persistence. It's just persistence.
Really? And you learned that being a marathon runner, I'm betting.
Probably, or something.
Just keep going.
Or just getting published the first time is addictive.
Oh.
And it's like, well, where's the next one?
So it's kind of like online dating.
Oh, yes. This is much more fun.
Right.
And I've never
and the
done
rewards
online
are
dating.
Greater.
Never done that.
It's about wanting to be accepted. At least I found that adopting dogs. That they have such incredible criteria that you find yourself wanting to measure up somehow.
Yes, but they love you unconditionally. Editors
the dogs do
not.
So true. No. Once you get the dog, once you get the editor, they're still going to be demanding.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. So, tell us about your creative process. Mm. You did say that that your illustration is work,
yeah.
And poetry is just joy. Tell us how you came to write one of your favorite poems.
Oh, boy, that's a hard one.
I'm sure there are a lot.
Some of them just come from an experience, you know, something I've been through or thought about in a particular way. Like going to the pond here, Fisher Pond.
Mm-hmm.
And Mukai Pond, that's another one. I'll be sitting there going on a run and then go down there and just sit on the bench and look at the pond, and stuff happens. And an idea will come.
I'm looking at your latest book, which is called Love Island, and I believe you said it is about Vashon Island.
Indeed, yes.
Would you read us something, one of your favorites from there?
Sure.
Running in the rain.
Let's see. How about This one is about something that happened. I was running along and I was in my head and whatever was happening, and this feather kind of spiraled down in front of me, and it was just this beautiful cobalt blue feather. And it was a Steller's Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote this. Form follows function. This flight feather, loosed from the wing of a Steller's Jay, spiraled down in its own flight pattern to land at my feet, iridescent cobalt blue perfection, shaped to its aerial purpose, grounded but still beautiful. Whatever is useful becomes beautiful in its duty, and loosed or laid down still holds its inner purpose. No one sees a feather that does not think of flight, and no one sees a sword that does not think of blood.
Whew. That just comes to you, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable. Do you have another one for us?
Sure.
Is this also from Love Island?
Well, and this one's about salmon because I studied salmon, but I also love the fact that they're so tenacious. This is from Shingle Mill, just being down at Shingle Mill Creek.
Uh-huh.
Stone and bone. I want to become a stone in this meandering river, large enough to hold my place through spring floods, small enough for a returning salmon to consider, nose me gently before struggling a little further upstream, where she will dig into lighter gravel a nest for her bright orange eggs, attracting the blood-colored males already on their way to death, both open-mouthed, mixed eggs and seed together. And after she covers each nest, no longer able to resist the relentless downstream current as it carries her spent body gently back over hard-won, riffled river bottom, to be the last place she rests, stone and bone together, bleached white and worn with the weather, water, and time, inanimate, unnoticed, dreaming. One molten, born in a river of fire, cooled to stillness by a river of ice. The other, a silver sea traveler, until natal desire compels her into sinuous red light.
Sandra Noel, each one of these that you read to me somehow pierce my heart.
Oh, thank you.
They're such beautiful and penetrating observations. How has your poetry or your creation of poetry affected your personal life?
Well, I think it's a way of meditating with words. I mean, it's the only way I can describe mm-hmm. it. I had a friend who's a poet, Kun Woon. You've heard of him. He is one of the greatest poets that I have ever read and listened to. And he is the publisher of this book, actually, Goldfish Press. He once called me a many-songed bird, which he's Chinese. And I just thought that was so lovely. But that song, that idea of it being a song, and I'm not a singer, I'm tone deaf.
Uh-huh.
I know you're a singer, but I can't hum correctly.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like with poetry, I can kind of sing it. You know, I can kind of say things that I would have liked to have been able to maybe sing if I could.
Well, and I feel when I listen to your poetry about nature, I feel as though you're talking about humans as well. There's what I'm feeling is an incredible connection with you as a human and me, then, the listener, to the natural world. Is that intentional on your part?
I think that's the way it should be. And I'm not talking for other poets, meaning my feeling about that is we're all connected. And we're making a hash out of things now.
Yes, we are.
But good-intentioned people are trying very hard. And I think individually, that's all you can do at this point. Because it's, you know.
Yeah, if we're talking about the climate crisis, which is near and dear to my heart, here we go on a divergence again. But what is it you think the average person can do that might have the most impact on the climate crisis?
Vote.
Mm.
Vote for people who have that intention. Just do simple things every day. Turn off a light. be aware how much water you're using on a personal level. Look at what you're doing on a personal level and try and get better at conserving. But definitely politically try and see what you can do out there in terms of supporting groups, people, politicians who see the problem and are willing to make the hard choices.
So when you are, I know you're not necessarily drawing nature for art or for your own expression, but when you are drawing images of nature, are you drawing nature as you hope it will be, as it is, or as it has been?
I've done both, depending on the project. But it's always idealized to a certain degree. When you go to a park, I mean, people go there to see you are here and get directed somewhere, and you know they don't want to see screaming squirrels. You know, they want to see pretty flowers and plants and how everything should be, kind of thing.
And so you are creating hope.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah. Let's hope it stays this way.
Exactly.
Yeah. We are talking with Vashon's newest poet laureate. She is Sandra Noel. You can see her and the other poets laureate from a few years back, Friday night, July 23rd at Snapdragon, 7 p.m., where they will be welcoming Sandra to the poet laureate, whatever, club at Snapdragon Outdoors. We only have a few minutes left. So would you choose another of your favorite poems from your latest book, Love Island?
Sure.
And read it to us as we go out.
Sure. Okay. This is a short one.
It can be longer.
Okay. All right. How about... sorry. Here we go.
That's
my favorite poet, nature poet. I have many favorite poets, but it's Mary Oliver, who passed away not
too
long ago.
Yes.
This is called After Reading Mary Oliver's Thirst and Pondering Faith. Does it matter how she came to faith? But loving her as I do, or loving her words, having never met, her words have pulled at my heart, my shrunken little heart, for years. I think love, the same kind of love that brought me to despair, brought her to despair, and then to her faith. My faith is watered wine, without enough punch or fire to make the effort worth the fall. I tried the altar and bowl, then followed her words into the open fields, on the long trail, by the dark pond. I followed as a supplicant, after a saint. Perhaps she would be appalled by this, but I know light when it dawns on me.
Sandra Noel, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Susan.
For joining us here on Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host with Real Talk every Tuesday at noon or at your convenience on voiceofvashon.org. And I want to say, Sandra, a lot of folks think of poetry as esoteric, but yours really speaks to the heart. And I hope you all have enjoyed listening to Sandra's poetry. You can get her books at the Vashon Bookshop.